The Burger Krieg Productions 15 Minutes of Fame podcast features the New York City three-piece punk band, the Louskateers. Here's their song Johnny Danger.
Check this out. It is the Burger Creek Productions 15 Minutes of Fame podcast. I have the Louskateers from New York City, although not everybody's currently in New York City. I got everyone on the phone. We're doing a video chat. So I guess welcome. My leg pits are sweating, but welcome. We're all here in this together.
Yum.
Hey, Louskies.
What up?
So I just literally, out of the gates, Have any of you guys had your houses impacted with lice, like actually as kids? Did you guys deal with a lice outbreak when you were kids or not? You did.
Well,
in kindergarten, they shaved everybody's heads because there was like lice attack.
So not at your house. Was it just at school? Because like we had it in my house and it was terrible. Like it was the fucking worst.
Yeah, you got to get rid of the Thundercat sheets.
My Ninja Turtle sheets are going in the burn pit. Like
Ninja Turtle pillowcases.
Yeah, exactly.
I refuse to get rid of my He-Man blanket.
Let it have lice. I don't care.
The smell of Rid is so gross. The Rid still creeps me out. No. Brilliant band name, by the way. I had to ask a question about lice because A, it's super gross, but B, the Louskateers, I mean, it's brilliant. So whomever came up with that, kudos. Maybe it was all three of you.
I don't know.
On a bender together. I don't know. But
it's still
this is kind of like a weird Brady Bunch thing too, like with the four panels here. Cause like I don't know if it looks the same for you guys, but I have like a four panel view of each of you. It's wonderful. So I guess one of my first questions, besides a lice-based question, who is the band parent? You all seem like pretty rowdy individuals. It seems like you have a good chemistry. You have fun. Who's the band parent?
Steve-O is the parent. He's the dad. He's the mean dad.
Is that?
He's the one that yells at us. Like Changsa and I are the errant children who are always getting in trouble and like want to do all this stuff and have all this energy and are running around. And like Steve-O's always like, guys, come on. We got to think about X, Y, and Z.
So is that why?
That's a good one. I'll think about it. Yeah, that's why.
He's the band dad.
He's a band dad.
Yes. He's daddy, not daddy bear, but close enough.
Close enough. And maybe that makes a little bit more sense because I know in that video that you guys had posted of you guys actually going and playing before shows, you were on the road. You were in the back seat angrily, like operating your phone. Because I'm pretty sure that was actually referenced, and I like caught that. And I was like, "Is that why you're always in the back? Because you're just always like doing, you're always doing things."
Because you have to. So, just some background: we were like on the third story of like an industrial building at that point, and I was trying to figure out whether I was going to toss them both over the side at that moment. And I was like, angry rant.
He's always angry, and that's usually what he does. He'll sit there texting and. Hi, we're going to a show. What are you mad about?
So I know, speaking of being angry, I know when you were down in Georgia, you had returned to your hotel room and it looks like there was like a little sea of urine. Who called the front desk and bitched? Was it you?
We didn't complain, actually.
No, we didn't. I went to get extra towels.
Oh, you did go and get extra towels.
I had to get extra towels because like it was right in front of the door, so everything we walked into was going to track into the room.
Ugh.
And it was like, it's not like we had a lot of space in the room. It was like 3 feet in, covered in water. You're like, all right, well, this is good.
Ugh.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. There was like every like every element of gross in that puddle. There was like blood, urine, semen, like,
gray water.
All it was missing,
like,
was
it was just
tape,
disgusting.
Crime scene tape that goes around it, you know, it's just missing that.
Body outline with chalk
in it. Changsta was stepping in it and dragging it, like traipsing all this shit into the room that we had to sleep in. So that's why Chivo had to go get towels.
What did it smell? What did it smell like? Was it like just
shit.
Rank?
It smelled like shit.
It smelled like lost. It smelled like broken dreams, a loss of hope in the world.
Tears of people staying there on monthly basis. You know, just.
To be fair, though, in the
background
like
we were hearing like I thought Chivo was joking. But at one point, there was, like, some guy, like, pimp slapping his girlfriend in the hallway.
Oh, I'm telling you, how's your money?
And you booked these hotels. And you booked these hotels yourself, so, like.
Yeah, Val, she's the one that books these things, so.
Who booked the hotel?
That's so
I don't
funny.
Know.
That's so
Who did
funny.
It?
So why are the past two videos, I think it's just from Unique to, like, 2021 and shows. Chango, why are you driving? Are you the only one that has a license? Are you the only one that feels comfortable operating the vehicle? Like, it seems like you're the designated captain, if you will, of the Lousketeer Express.
The SS Subaru.
To answer this
He's
question,
also like the worst driver in the entire world.
Which is funny, yeah.
He's almost gotten us killed many times.
I'm gonna interrupt here. And it's funny how she says I'm the worst driver, but I'm the one always driving. Go figure. No, but to be serious, though. But to go figure, though. No, it's actually, we all take turns, though. Usually, I just drive during the day. And during the nighttime, I'm shit, though. It's usually, that's when Chiva usually takes over or Ginger Val. But mostly during the day, it's usually me.
He's not allowed to drive past, like, 7 o'clock at night.
But I'll be driving. That's cool. True. Okay, fair. But I'll be driving from, like, 6 a.m. to, like, 7. From like 6 to 6, so
you pull the long shift. You pull the long shift.
Danny, don't drive at night,
Danny.
No,
that helps. I was curious about that because like I know it tends to be in bands. There's like certain people that just don't drive. There's some people that only will drive at night, like after the show. And there's some people like, dude, I'll drive there, but I want to drink and shit and hang out, and I don't want to fucking deal with driving back roads of Vermont at 3 a.m. I just don't want to do it. So I was curious what that kind of layout is like for you guys.
Well, one time Changsta fell asleep behind the wheel. So that's when we gave him a curfew after that. And we do have, we just recently kind of, because we've done this a couple times, we've toured a couple times now together for like the last 4 years, I guess. And so we have kind of a system now. Chivo usually will drive like the late night. I'll do like the right before the late night. I'll do like, what do I usually do? Like 9 at night till like 3 or 4 a.m, something like that. 2, 3, 4 a.m. And then Chang said, like, we wake him up in the morning and he's like, I don't want to do it. But he does it.
He's like, I need coffee.
Tell me about this. Tell me about this almost getting in an accident situation. What happened? So
now, wait. Before you say anything. In fairness to Changsta, that one time that he almost fell behind the wheels because he had to prove that he was going to drive all day. And he drove for like 10 hours. So, yeah, I can understand why he was like.
No, it wasn't. That was Christmas party when I couldn't drive.
Okay, and all fairness, too. Okay, I'll let Val take over after I say this part. So I've been working all day. I was up. I was working in the city at the time, and I had to be up at like 4 a.m. And we were supposed to go to Georgia the next day to record. So I already worked. I worked from 4 a.m. to pretty much 7, 8 p.m. And then we started driving around 10 p.m. I was like, yeah, I should be able to do this. And then after that, I'll let Val take over.
Yeah, so I had specifically asked, I was like, guys, I didn't want to leave on that day because I was supposed to go to some Christmas party and I knew I probably wasn't going to be in good shape to drive. So I was like, and Chanks is like, I don't mind driving. I can do it. You know, he starts talking all this shit. He's like, oh, I never get tired, man. I can do this all night. He's not behind the wheel for 5 minutes. And all of a sudden, the car starts like veering to the side of the road. And I'm like, what? Wake up!
Like,
So what you're saying, this isn't the first time then.
I've felt this before.
Because I remember that day where he was driving for 10 hours and he was shot. He was shot. He was trying. He was like.
Now, was this not post show? This was just after you worked pretty much all day, right?
Oh, well, yeah. No, that time I'm talking about.
That's when we were going to Georgia.
Yeah. Well, we were going cross country when he drove that 10-hour day.
No,
yeah.
The time when he fell asleep is when we went to Georgia.
It
wasn't the first time that's happened, though. There was that time where he had to prove that he could drive forever. And what do you call it? And I understand why he did it. I understand why. No names. I understand why he did it. But yeah, no, he, what do you call it? But he tried, and like after like 10 hours, like he was like faded. You could just tell he's like, and I'm like, oh shit. I was like, damn.
That was in the Mojave Desert, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
When
yeah,
he got all sunburned on his arm from driving outside.
He had like one red arm.
I forgot the farmer's tan going.
You have one red arm. It's like you look like a product of like some shitty, like, you know, 1980s Cold War era anti-Soviet. You're like the robot Soviet person with like the literal red arm. Like that's your thing. That's your character. Dude,
you're
driving.
Andy Striper.
And mind you, we were going through the Mojave Desert with no air conditioning because the day before we left for tour, we found out that the air wasn't working in the van. We're literally going through, and it's like the flames of hell, just like you could see Satan's arm like raising up from the bottom of the van, and like pulling it.
Memories from the bottom of my heart. Oh,
that's too funny. Dude, that sucks though. No AC driving through a fucking desert.
For 2 weeks.
And we had to do it twice.
What is there even to look at? There's got to be rock formations and stuff like that,
mirages.
Right? Were you in a panel van? Tell me you were in like a panel van or something. Well, you could actually see.
No.
There might not have actually even been somebody driving. That could have been a mirage too. I don't know. We were just all like loopy and
we're dead. And we don't even know it.
Yeah.
We're already dead. We're just sitting in a hobby desert dying right now.
Christ, driving through the desert twice. Holy fuck. You didn't learn your lesson the first time. You had to go back, apparently, right?
We had to come back.
Around. You literally, physically had to come back.
How to book shows, though.
Yes.
So, what's that?
Now, get this. Already, we're already into this, been talking for, you know, 10 minutes or whatever, bullshitting about whatever. It seems like everyone has a pretty good, like, you guys gel. Right, good sense of humor, sarcastic. Now, your bio on fucking Spotify says, quote, the Lousketeers were a Craigslist and Bohemian makeout party miracle. Can one of you please elaborate on that? Because I kind of want to know a little bit more. I have to.
I love Alan.
Blame Val for that one.
Yeah. Oh, all right. So we were part one of that, the Craigslist part was like, yeah, I reached out on Craigslist and I was like, I want to play music. And the next thing I know, this creepy guy, Changsta, shows up in my living room and doesn't talk to me at all. He just walks over to the drum set and starts playing. And it was this awkward moment where I'm like, and you see us now, you know, we're all like good friends and we make fun of each other and we get along. And look at the faces. But it was just weird. So then he's like, oh, we need a bass player. I know this guy named Fabian. I'm like, Fabian? I was like, wait a second. How many Fabians that are bass players are in this area? Because before I had met Fabian so we were at like this Bohemian party where they were like playing spin the bottle and everybody was making out with each other. And I saw him and I'm like, did I make out with you? I was like, what exactly? I don't remember that night very much, but I remember you from that party. And we were like, oh, we know each other. And it was weird. We all just like got together and it was like, all right. So he came like right after Dan and I had started hanging out and jamming. And it was like all these awkward, like, I want to sit here and not talk to you on the couch and play drums. That's it. That's all I do, play drums. And I was like, all right. And now we're all good friends, but it was just like a weird, it's an interesting success story because a lot of people don't last, you know, a lot of bands don't last very long. Right. And we've actually like, we're headed towards album three, just finishing two, and we've gone on four tours without officially killing each other. And so that's a decent track record, I would say.
I would agree with that, especially having,
you're not dead yet.
Especially having essentially metting a third of you met at a Bohemian makeout party. So I mean, like, that's saying something just for, you know.
Two-thirds, yes.
Two-thirds. Excellent. Now, I guess here's the real question, too. You know, what's kind of astounding about that is New York City, obviously, is a huge, like, hugely diverse, like, artistic city. Hustle and bustle, it's constant. And, I mean, apart from, like, the Craigslist ad, was there, like, a huge amount of time before, you know, Changsta showed up, played drums, sat on the couch, didn't talk? Because, like, I feel like a place like that, there's just so many people that are playing music, they're responding to ads, like, everyone's always doing shit. So, like, how long did it actually take to form the Lousketeers as of the lineup today? Was that a long period of time? No.
Not at all. We were like, I remember Chinks and I, we sat on my couch and we were both kind of like, dude, what do you want to do? And we had like one of those conversations and I was like, man, I want to travel and play music. That's all I want to do. And he was like, yeah. And then, you know, and then shortly after, jumped in with the clownery. And, you know, it was literally like a conversation like that. We went up actually taking our first tour that summer. We all got together in the winter and we were on our first tour. And that summer we were like right into it.
And this was before the first album too.
We hadn't even released the album. We had no merchandise. We were just, you know, bouncing around with stickers and like homemade cards and like,
we made like a quick
and those tour. Ears. You still had those ears, no matter what.
Don't have a CD, but we can give you some ears.
We tried to, we actually tried to make a 4-song demo because we were trying to get into this thing called Punk Island. So we actually, we made like a four, like, we went to this guy in Yonkers, which I'm not gonna name names, but yeah, we recorded like a 4-song demo, and we seriously, we like rehearsed the songs for like probably a couple of weeks, maybe 3 or 4, and then we just recorded it, and that's what we were selling on our first tour, was that demo.
Now, based on how you kind of described that entire tour, I don't know if the whole AC or lack of AC through the desert occurred on that tour, but like, it wasn't. Regardless of that, what were some
you
of the
just
big?
Just want us to go through trauma.
No, I don't want you to relive or rehash. No. I'm curious about, with that tour, just how you describe this. You came together almost at a moment's notice, having made out or not made out at a party. You know, like, you're a three-piece. Like, the question then becomes, on that tour, that first tour, what were some of, like, the big lessons you had to learn or that you learned throughout the course of that tour that you never made those mistakes again? Maybe you still made the mistakes again, but you still learned it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of what I'm trying to get at. Big lessons learned on your first tour.
Don't accept 3-hour gigs.
Ooh. Were you playing like...
Oh, my God. That is a funny story. Yeah, we wound up... So Changsta books us this gig and doesn't tell us till we're there.
It's a good gig. It's a good gig. It's just...
It's a good gig. Now, mind you, we were just starting out. We didn't have 3 hours worth of songs.
30 minutes.
We had no fucking idea what to do. We were like, okay, so they want us to play till 2 o'clock in the morning and like house band or something. And so we wound up like redoing the first set. We did the set twice and then also faked our way through some cover songs that were terrible. Some punks like Dead Kennedys and like a couple other punk bands, and we faked our way through we just butchered those songs. I mean, you know, and it was just like, you know, this shit only happens to us. Mind you, we also had a 3-flight walk up with all our gear, and we had been driving for like 15 hours in the heat. And we get there and we're just like, and Changsa comes in and he's like, guys, I got some good news and bad news. The good news is we're getting paid like X amount of money, whatever it was. It was a lot for a band, a punk band coming into Virginia. It was a pretty good amount of money. You know, the bad news is we're going to be playing until 2 o'clock in the morning.
3-hour set. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like, that even is, that's stressful to me. and I wasn't even there. But you know, even when someone's like, "Oh, you guys gotta play like 45 minutes, we'll give you that." It's like, okay, we have enough material, but still, it's like, do I have enough banter to bullshit with people about?
We did. But
I look at it this way too. If we had that show now, we would have gotten somebody nearby. We would have had two other bands with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We would have learned. We did learn. That's one of the things we did learn is.
Yeah.
We know now that we can get local bands to come and play with us.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes things so much easier once you get for other bands involved. So.
Yeah, I would. I shout the Changsta out for. Like being our networking source, because if we think back to like what we were in the first year to now, we really just networked the shit out of the last couple of years. Like we can call people in, like what Chivo just said, like, you know, we learned how to do certain things online digitally, and COVID actually brought a lot of opportunity to learn how to do those things because you had no other choice. You had to figure something out. And you weren't in person networking and talking to other bands and hanging out. You had to do everything online. So that was actually, it worked in our favor a lot because like Chivo said, like we learned how to do a lot of things way more smoothly than what we used to. Definitely. And
on top of what Chivo's saying, I would say another thing we learned to do is we become a little more selective through doing shows as well. Like in the first like year, we would pretty much play anything. We wouldn't play like pay-to-play shows. And now we refuse to do anything like that. We're like paying to play and all that nonsense with like selling tickets and everything. Now we will actually like scope the area. We'll look for bands, like Chivo said, around the area to play with that like suit our sound, you know, and we'll try to promote like the other bands. We've learned social media. We've learned how to really promote through social media and all that. So which that first tour, we didn't do any of that. We would just like go out there and play without a thought.
Now, obviously, when rock and roll first changed each of our lives, what I'm curious about is what about rock and roll changed your lives? What was it about the music? Was it the raw energy? Was it the aggression? Was it because it sounded like nothing else you'd heard before? Like, why did rock and roll impact each one of you?
Can I go first? Because sure. this is very ripe in my mind because I just recently was published in a punk anthology where I wrote about this. And for me, I had a very crazy upbringing. It was very, very dysfunctional. And music was my escape. You know, music was what got me out of all that. You know, punk music in specific. I had a friend named Danny. He was this little skater kid. And he was the one who introduced me to my first punk cassette tape, and he used to make me mixtapes and stuff, and he was this really cool dude, and he's like, stop listening to that Nirvana and listen to this. And like, it really, like, it changed. It literally, punk music changed my entire life. It's so special to me because it didn't matter what I had going on, it was an escape. And then to have a chance to get to make it and make it at different points in my life is like the best feeling in the world. So it was definitely like, I would say it was, you know, I used to go hitchhiking to punk shows every weekend. I would go out or I'd take the city bus, and my parents didn't have money. So I'd like panhandle or something to try to get it $5 to go see a queer show or something. And that was my escape. That was like the best part of my whole week, you know, and it still is. It's very, very punk in specific is very special to me for those reasons.
That was wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Who wants to go next? You want to go next? I just think the rock to me is the most, the realest form of music. It's the most heartfelt like music, like out of like, I don't want to judge all types of music, but to me, it's the most heartfelt, most real music. And it's half the reason why I started even teaching or drumming in the first place. I'd be just upset. I gravitated towards, like, I don't know, like when I was in middle school and high school. And then once I like really drenched myself in it, I started playing. And then I just wanted to learn anything I would listen to. I just wanted to learn it and be engulfed in it. And it was just, I just gravitated right towards it. And to this day, I still think it's the most realest form. It's not to say that any other form is not, but I know personally, and I think Val and Chivo can speak for this. If you find a band that you are really passionate about and you they really affect you, you're going to follow that band. You're going to really do whatever you can to search that band. It doesn't matter if they are a mainstream band or a local band or us or any, it doesn't matter to me. If you find a really good rock band, you're going to search them out and you'll go out of your way to, you know, follow them and do what you got to do.
Stop it, Val.
I agree with that. Did each of you grow up in the city? And I just have one small thing I want to say about it. Did each of you grow up in the city?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
None of us. I was born in New York, but I was raised in Florida, and I lived in the city for a long time.
Yeah, you grew up in Tampa, so that's a city. It's just not. It's not New York City.
I grew up on the beach, but I'm from New York. I was born in New York.
So what I find interesting about that is, like, for me, it's like I grew up like outside of Syracuse in like essentially rural. So mm-hmm. The bit where you're talking about, like, when you find a band, and even what you were saying too, it's like, you know, panhandling to go and see the Queers on the weekends or whatever. It's like you made it happen. If it was important mm-hmm. to you enough, you made it fucking happen. Even if you had to travel the 4 hours to Boston or wherever, you made it happen. That's the magic. Mm-hmm. Both of you, great answers so far, but excellent. Thank you. Now, you're in the hot seat right now.
Steve-O.
Bassmaster General, I'm just telling you that. You're in the hot seat.
So, you know, I like... Sorry. I like to start with saying, like, once you find something real, right? You want real, this real band. You want a real band.
Why do you sound like Dan?
Mine's pretty short and sweet. I grew up in a broken home, so I spent a lot of time by myself. So I grew up kind of just with music. I grew up losing myself in it, in these sounds and these different. I grew up in hip hop first, because that's what my sister was listening to. So that was like first thing. Like my first four albums were. Notorious B.I.G., Rage Against the Machine, Live, and Pearl Jam 10. Jeez. Those are my first four albums. And so there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of anger in a lot of those albums. but it helped bring out or at least connect with the side of me that I didn't know was there. And then when I finally started playing an instrument, it brought out this part of me, this part of my soul that only actually comes out when I play music. And it's the only time that I get to show a piece of myself that no one else sees. And ultimately that's the person that that I'm most connected to, because it's the most hidden away part of me. So that's why it's so important for me to play.
Sometimes music communicates more than words, so at least for me it do. So it's like there's a lot of things I can say, at least drumming. I'm sure Chivo can say playing bass, and I'm sure Val can say just playing guitar and sing that you can't do with like a normal conversation either. So.
Yep.
Hell yeah. I like how each one of you kind of approached that, because the one thing that I've noticed like doing this for a while, and like I went to school initially for journalism, fucking washed out. I was like, I can't do this shit. Magazines are dying. I got to fucking be smart and I'll just go and manage nightclubs, right? Because that's a fucking great idea to do. But anyway, it's like I got out of the journalism thing. Now it's like coming back. It's like there's questions like that that I think oftentimes, again, I was like, yeah, it's obligatory. But it's like, no, fuck that. It's like everybody has a different fucking story. And that's why I do this at the end of the day, because I want to hear those types of things. Now,
I love stories, too. I love stories.
And especially talking musicians, like we're fucking mm-hmm. insane. So it's like those are the types of people that I like to talk with, because they got good stories. And I actually wanted to follow up on what you're talking about, your first four albums. I know you listed off yours, which is wild. I'm guessing. So when you said Notorious B.I.G. was your first, this is just a quick aside. Which did you acquire first? Did you have Ready to Die? Was that your first one? Did you have Life After? Okay. So excellent. Now, for the two of you, what were your first four albums? It could have been via CD, tape, LP. It doesn't matter. What were your first four?
Who answers this first?
I feel like Val's are going to be hilarious.
No, because if I answer it honestly, I mean, I was really young, and I don't feel like that represents my musical taste now, because I was like 8.
Well, how about this? How about this?
My first 4 punk albums.
How about this? Think it doesn't necessarily need to be punk.
When I was later.
It doesn't necessarily need to be punk if you don't want it to be. What I'm saying is like how old were you when you said those first 4 that you named off? How old were you roughly?
That was my first albums I've ever bought myself. That was when I was 15. I was 15 when I bought this.
So does that help answer that at all? That would be the one criteria. Just when you could afford it. Doesn't matter if you're 14, 18, 12, whatever.
Okay. Well, if it was when I was around 14, I guess the first time I bought my own. I mean, my mom bought me Michael Bolton when I was 11. Used it as a freak. And I was like, what the frick is this?
Michael Bolton. That's
awesome. I mean, like, you know, typical Captain like Jack Jewish Jack. Mom, like, you're gonna like him. He's a very nice boy. Very nice. Listen to the solos. He knows how to rock hard.
He knows how to rock like, hard. No.
So mine would have to be I would definitely say Nirvana Nevermind. Pearl Jam 10 was one. Violent Femmes, I love them. I was obsessed with them. And who else would have been probably in that around? It probably would have been somebody like, it probably actually would have been like Hole, Live Through This. Okay. I love that album. Great I album. Still love that album. Say what you want about Courtney, but that album is awesome.
It's solid. It's solid.
It's a great album.
By the way,
would probably be around that time when I could buy CDs. That's what I was. I mean, it was that whole grunge era.
Nevermind was my 5th. That was the one I got afterwards. So,
yeah, I was really into
the secret track on that album was the best song.
Yeah, what? It was a good track. That was a good track.
That secret track is pretty dope on that album.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Thanks, okay, mine. All right. I actually received mine. I was like, from a friend. And I got Limp Bizkit's Significant Other. I'll put that out there.
Hell yeah.
Just lost your significant other.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Saying that.
She's not watching this.
actually, surprisingly enough, one thing we all share in common was Pearl Jam's 10. I received that. Blink-182's Animal of the State. And Korn's Issues. Those were the 4. Because it was 19, I was like 99, 2000, where like, MTV was like blowing up, and they just played like new metal, pop punk. Which that their version of pop punk was like Blink-182 and Green Day and Offspring, and for somehow Pearl Jam got thrown in there. So those were my first 4.
Look at that neck vein popping out! Holy That's shit, right. What's going on over there, bro? What's going
I don't on know, bro. There?
What is? What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you pitching your leg or something?
Yeah. Look at that band right there. Yeah.
That's crazy. Even though this episode is going to be released after the new album is released, mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about the record itself. As much as you can with it not having been released yet, right? Kind of a weird thing. We're doing like a time, we're fucking around with time right now because it's not real. No, I'm just kidding. I'm wondering about what the process was like for this record. How excited are you for it? I'm assuming you're stoked, right? But just let's talk about the new record.
Who wants to go first?
I threw a lot at you. I threw a lot at you. It's like a playground right now.
Okay.
I mean, what?
You're about to start this one off.
Yeah, I mean, it took us. It was 2 years, right? We started really, we ended up playing during the first album. We were actually playing the first album. We had written about, like four songs that are on the current second album that we were playing live a lot. So you've heard us play live in the past 2 years. You've probably heard a bunch of the songs that are on the on the new album. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
They've gotten better. but it's, they're basically the thing I love the most about a lot of the songs that we have is about how real how about effectively real they are to real life. They come from real life experience. They come from an emotional place, a place of pain and love, suffering and joy, and those things come together in a lot of the things that Val writes. And those things really come out and they show in a lot of the things that we play. And when she sings, and she sings these things, she does it sometimes in humor, she does it sometimes in angst, she does it sometimes in happiness, and then like fear, like fury. And like you can hear it in the way that she does it, in the way that she sings these songs. And it just shows how much love and time and effort went into creating these things and how close they are to her chest. So it's one of those things that when you hear it, and especially because of the production value we've had on this, which we didn't realize was going to be this good, and it sounds awesome. So when you listen to the first album, it's like, oh, that was good. And then you hear the second album, the quality is like,
oh, night and
world. You're like, damn, I want to redo the first album though. And so, on top of that, you have like, you have Changsta's, he's always pushing the rhythm parts to their limits. Like he's always driving it faster and harder and trying to make this mark. And you can just see like he wants to be seen that way. And you want to see those things. And it comes out when he makes these songs, like when he makes the music behind it. And I'm lucky enough that like when I create things I do on the album, that it comes together with his part and her part together. And then we have this like really, I would say, like, I don't, for lack of a better term, a very beautiful bond of musical harmony. And when that happens, we got this second album, which, you know, for the life of me, it's one of those things that after you're done finally recording it and mixing it and then mastering it, and then like you hear it and you're like, all right, third album, let's go.
yeah.
But it's pretty awesome. So
I agree with everything that he just said. And also, like, you know, the first album we were in Joe Queer's house, which was awesome, but we were really pressed for time and we didn't have time to like put all the bells and whistles. The first album's just raw. Like, it is what it is. It's naked, it's in your face, it's fun, it's angry, it's all these things. But the second album, we really took our time with it and we went back. And, you know, my thing is like, I'm a big old 50s, 60s fan of vocal layers and harmonies. And I really had a chance to play around with that on this album. And that was so fun for me. And I feel like all of us did something different on this album. Like the style is definitely different from the first. We kind of like veer into like playing around, like flirting with the genres of like alternative, a little grungy in some places. One of the songs to me, every time I hear it, it sounds like a musical. And I'm like, oh, it's such a serious song about racism, but it sounds like a freaking musical, like with all the harmonies and everything in the background. So it's definitely unique. I mean, I would say, like, you know, we play with a lot of different bands. And one thing that I love about our band and I love about this album is that it is definitely different. Whether you like it or not, that's your subjectivity, but it's different. And you know, that's one great thing about our band is like, we don't really just say, oh, we're only this, we're only doing this. We kind of like delve into different genres and different, we play around with different things and we try new things and we just do what we want to do, which in my opinion is what punk is all about. It's not about fitting into a mold. It's like, speak your truth, do what you want to do, you know? And so we did that on this album. And I think that's what I'm the most proud of, is that we just kind of let go on it and did what we wanted to. And it's definitely like Chivo said, it's way more well produced than the first one. And it's fun, and it is like, it has a lot of heart to it too, definitely. And you know, which was like just an appetizer to the third album, because the third album is just, that's coming up, that hopefully we're going to start formally working on soon. It's like, it's just raw blood and guts. It's just so much, but it's really fun too. So, and that all came from the pandemic. So these songs were actually floating around, like they said, for a while. And during the pandemic, we finally had the time to start recording them. So, and in the middle of all that, we're also beginning to write a third album as well, which I'm really excited about as well. So,
yeah. And as far as the second album goes too, like everybody said, during the first album, we were kind of just learning, getting our feet wet as far as even just writing songs. So we were like, just, it was like boom, boom, boom. Everything is just like kind of, we did it and we just did it. And we just kind of, it was raw and we just put it out there. But the second album, we really learned to really work off of one another. Like we really learned like our writing process. Like I learned how like Val writes. I learned how Chivo is very melodic bass player. He's a very melodic bass player. How he can like really fill in the dots between, you know, Val and myself. And yes, some songs we wrote also part of the first album. But the second album too, there are some songs that we took our time with, and we really took the time to write. Like, okay, it wasn't just like boom, boom, boom with every song. We took the time to like Chivo has a song on the second album that it took time to really get down and learn. Like he wrote down. Yeah, and there's a song called Felix Mandelson where there was a song where we like Val and I, we actually, because before we were just write a song, we'd have an idea and we just bring it to the table, and then we learned to really gel together, to work together, to really make a song, and that would.
And then we also have the movie.
So I really think by the second album, we really took our time, and we really figured out okay what really works, and we weren't rushing like we were the first album.
Yeah.
And we put details like we would go back to studio, like Val would have backups, like Babe would he would have bass solos in there. Like we didn't have that on the first album. And we took our time with that. We had that percussion stuff in there. We had to div all these types of layers that we didn't have the chance to have in the first album.
Slide whistle.
Or Babe making or Chivo making fake trumpet noises in the
You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
That's awesome. Not in fact real trumpets. When you listen to the album, not in fact real trumpets. Please tell me you credited yourself as trumpet mouth on track two, you know, or whatever.
He brings a kazoo to shows now.
Is it in the liner notes? I was going to say it's got to be in the liner notes.
Rusty trombone, Fabian
Pollitt. If you were discovering something new, in terms of those veins, the overly aggressive, like. Overly aggressive, you know, street punk stuff, or, you know, the heartfelt, like Joey Ramone influenced, like love ballady, rock and roll types, you know, when discovering like new stuff, do you find yourself kind of going down those rabbit holes of like, I've never listened to this band, but they're a bubblegum pop band. I'm kind of vibing on this. I want to discover more. Or are you still all over the place when it comes to discovering music? Do you know what I'm saying?
I can answer that. Like I really, when we play with other bands, I really go home and listen to their stuff. Like, I really look them up on Spotify or I'll buy their CDs, and I'm very passionate about discovering new music. And I'll be honest, like, for me, I know that, like, most of the time I will be drawn to a Ramones core kind of sound. Mm. Like, a Ramones-esque kind of sound, like what you said. You know, I do love the love songs. I like the boppy 50s, 60s influenced style punk. That's usually what I tend, not that I don't like other things, but I definitely tend to gravitate towards bands like that. I also love meeting female bands, which I don't know if that answers the question, but like, I love to find a really good melodic female band because you don't see that a lot. Like, female fronted bands, when we play, it's a male dominated, you know, usually the shows are dominated by males, you know? So it's nice to me when I can see another female, like who's doing like something like that. Like, I like melody. I'm not into like, if there's a song that doesn't have melody, I can't get down with it. I just can't. Like, if they're just screaming, I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna go smoke a cigarette. I'll be back in like 30 minutes. Like, if they're just screaming into a microphone and there's nothing, like I'll watch for a little bit, you know, to be supportive, but I'm just not into that. I've never been into that. Like, it has to have something, you know, for me to like it. And melody, I am a big person with melody. And later discovering, like, if it's someone that I like, I'll listen to the lyrics later. You know, sometimes when you're in a live show, you don't catch everything. But I might go home and listen to a band on Spotify or buy their CD and be like, yeah, I like what they're saying, you know? So, most of the new music that I personally discover is from the live shows that we play. Mm. You know, I don't have a lot of time to sit around floating around the internet, you know? So most of the time it's usually like when we're out playing with other bands, you know? So, and I know that that's what I tend to be drawn to. I like melody and I love love songs and I love things that have, you know, some good meaning. I like political songs too. I like, you know, anything that has like meaning. I feel like this new pop punk crap that comes out now, that's coming out now, is like terrible, to be honest. It doesn't sound like punk. It's annoying and they all sound the same.
It's like, well, that's kind of like every genre now. Every genre is to a point where terrible. There's so, well, it's because the individuality of voices too. Vocals are all, you know, it's one thing to be talented as a vocalist, or because honestly, that's like the front person. It's people that, that's what everyone hears. But if you're, as a person who's the front of a band, if your vocals sound like everyone else's vocals, you don't stand out.
No.
You just don't. I think that's the one thing that the 90s had that has been lost in the last, I don't know, like several decades, is that no matter if your voice was perfect or even that good, it was the individuality of the sound of your voice. You know, even like the guy from Three Eyed Blind, I hate his voice, but you know what?
Recognizable.
But like his voice was so recognizable. Mm-hmm. You knew who that was. Hey, it's that guy with the lisp. Yeah, we know who he is. That's him. Like, you're like, oh, we know who that guy is. It's like, step away from that lisp. Yeah, we gotta know. It's cool. That's you. So we gotta, everyone had their individual sound. And that's what made them different. Down to whether or not they were like underproduced or overproduced, they all sounded different. You could tell bands apart. Now you can't tell anybody apart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it so bad. Mm-hmm. Is that the day of the garage band is over. You can't find that. And like, you can find a shitty mix. You can find a shitty demo tape anywhere. Like I'm saying, somebody who's put their heart and soul in actually creating that sound, like actually putting that work in to make a sound that's their own, you don't find that anymore. You find everyone trying to sound like everyone else. And that's ultimately what killed the 90s and the 2000s. Mm-hmm. Every copycat clone band came out and sounded like garbage. Mm-hmm. They all sounded like garbage.
Yeah.
And not the good band garbage. I meant like garbage.
And to go off what Chivo was saying too, like, and actually also what Val was saying, a lot of the new bands that at least we found.
Death Planet! Oh, sorry.
I was going to say a lot of the new bands that we found are actually been playing with people. Like, what Chivo just said, Death Planet, they're a great band.
Oh, I love Death Planet.
We play with a lot of great bands, like a band like Kids on Fire, like from Seattle. They're a great band. We found some. Just a couple weeks ago, we played with a bunch of awesome bands.
Oh, yeah.
We played with this band called The Zoonoids. We played with Mad Splatter. Like, these are bands we just found out, like, just like, playing with.
The Nuclears, too,
from New York. And the Prozac's on your shirt. Like, we love them.
Take a few.
So, and these are all bands And these are all bands that we've played with, like, or are going to play with or in the future. These are not bands you'll find on the mainstream radio because, like Chivo said, a lot of mainstream radio, like, is crap. I hate to sound like an old fuck like that, but it's garbage. Like, there's nothing that I felt like Chivo said, has substance. And the bands, it's almost like, I almost feel like the underground is sort of coming up again, because when you go to these punk shows, you'll see, like, these great bands. You'll see all these bands, you know, put up, like, a really good show. And these bands, I think, are way better than anything that's going on in the mainstream now. Like, pop punk, what is pop punk considered now? Like, freaking rappers, what consider rappers doing, working with, like, Travis Barker, like Machine Gun Kelly? Like, what's that? To me, that's garbage. I don't know if you guys like that, whatever, but I think it's garbage. And I feel like a lot of the bands we play with are 100 times better than that. Like,
Oh, the genre jumping, that's always fun.
Exactly.
Watching guys who are like, I'm going to appropriate a sound and then try to go back into punk now because I'm punk now.
Like we're gonna be so lame.
We're gonna be
playing a festival in a couple of weeks called the Savage Mountain, and I guarantee you, all those bands on there, like the Downstrokes, the Jasons, Thyroid Rose, all these bands, they're real bands. They're, like I said, going back to the real bands. Like, these are bands with real emotion. Like, they put their heart and soul into what they're doing. And like, I feel like a lot of the mainstream acts now, it's not there. It's garbage. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that's an opinion thing, and I could be wrong, but I just feel like a lot of bands that we've played with, or you see, like, these punk shows, are they put their time and effort into their songs, and it shows. It shows on stage, and you see it, you'll feel it. And that's how, if you thought, like I said, going back to what I was saying, if you see a really good band, you'll know.